and welcome to Worlds Apart. For more than three centuries, ever since the Peace of Westphalia, European powers agreed that identity and sovereignty came hand in hand. You don't need to like me or approve of me for us to live side by side. But the end of the Cold War called this principle into question, allowing some nations or some ideologies to claim that they are inherently better than others and therefore have the right, even the responsibility, to remake others in their image. Where is it leading Europe, the West, and the world? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Milan Urich, member of the European Parliament for Slovakia and leader of the Republic movement. Mr. Urich, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for being available.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm looking forward for your questions.
Well, me too, especially because this year is pretty remarkable both for European and Western politics, because I think never before we had such a clash between the so-called establishment parties and the so-called extreme or extremist parties. Now, I'm sure you don't consider yourself to be a radical, and yet this is how you are sometimes referred to in mainstream media. Let me start by asking whether you think that gives you any additional support among your voters.
Oh, come on. I don't think that we are any kind of extremists. This is just a label which is used by our political opponents if they simply run out of arguments and they have nothing left to say. So they're starting labeling us as extremists, as radicals, as Russian agents, and so on. But let's ask ourselves, what's really extreme about our political opinions or about our political program? We want to end the war and we want peace. Is that extremism? We want to protect Europe against illegal migration. We want to protect our family and traditional values. We want to protect freedom of speech as well. Is this the extremism? I don't think so. So let's have a look around. Let's have a look at the current European governments, at European Commission. And I think they are the ones who are destroying our continent, who are destroying our Europe, our states. And they are the ones who are to be called extremists.
What I find very interesting is that how short-minded this tactic is of labeling somebody extremist, because when they call you that name, by extension, they also call that anyone who happens to have the same views as you. And I suppose it's quite a lot of people in Europe. So let me repeat my question again. Do you think people may support you simply because they don't like their views to be called extremist?
People support us, and the support is growing. You can see it all around Europe, simply because of the fact that we bring the rational approach, that we bring common sense back to European policy, back to national policies, and common sense which is missing in current government policies. And that's why they are supporting us, because they see that we are more realistic and our program is more positive than the program of current government and current European Commission. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference. We are not extremists at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a pretty sharp tongue, which you frequently use during the sessions of the European Parliament. Let me play a very short clip from one of your speeches to give our audience a taste of it.
The European Union is turning into a Soviet-style Politburo, which attacks anyone who expresses a dissenting opinion. I want to ask you to stop this, because eventually you'll be hoist by your own petard and the whole of Europe will act like the farmers.
Now, being hoisted by your own petard, coming from the Soviet era or Soviet-style Politburo, I think those are quite rich metaphors and they can be quite offensive. On a personal level, do you enjoy even a little bit ruffling the feathers of your fellow MPs?
What I meant with that speech is that the European Union resembles Soviet bureaucracy, Soviet paperwork, Soviet single-line policy, and those Soviet regulations, and that Soviet centralization generally. And I think that the centralization of European Union simply went too far. This is not the European Union which we entered 20 years ago, and this is not cooperation we were promised to have. So simply that's the thing we want to point out, and that's the thing we want to change in the future in our political program. And whether I do enjoy it or not, for me is not fun. For me, it's like, personally, I think that I'm quite friendly person privately. I'm not that that kind of tough fighter privately, but somebody has to speak loudly about the problems the Europe is facing. If we are not going to do that, then the question is, who is gonna? Because the mainstream politicians, the establishment politicians, aren't going to say about those negatives. So that's why our voters voted us to the position, for me, the position of member of European Parliament. And that's why I have to speak loudly and to point out the problems which Europe is facing and to bring solutions. That's my work and that's what I'm doing.
Now, before we move to discuss all those serious issues, let me ask one more personal question. I wonder, when you encounter your colleagues later on after making those speeches in the cafeteria or, let's say, in the bathroom, do you greet each other? Do you shake hands? Does this political polarization extend into personal disdain?
I don't have any problem with my political opponents on a personal level, even though we do have a different political opinions about many things, of course, and I don't agree with them. I don't think that politics should be a reason to hate each other, because we see where it goes when we come to this approach. Unfortunately, our political colleagues from left-wing parties, from liberal parties, don't share this approach. They have a problem to shake our hands. They have a problem to communicate with us. They have a problem to say even hello on the corridors, because simply they think that they are something better, that they are the right one, they're the enlightened ones, the correct ones, and we are the bad ones. For them, it is so simple. And I'm scared of this approach, because we saw it like 8 years ago when there was a group of people which think or thought they are better than the rest of the world. And it ended with a big conflict, with a Second World War. So I don't like this approach, their enlightenment. And I'm, to be honest, a little bit scared of it.
And the reason I'm asking this question is because I think politics, originally at least, it used to be about relatedness. People ran for office at least on the promises to make life of their neighbors better, to build roads, to build schools, to bring some other practical improvements into people's lives, rather than pontificate about some high-minded ideas. Does the European Parliament discuss those practicalities, mundane realities of life anymore?
The European Parliament or the European Union cannot even decide how many genders do we have in the world. I mean, like men and women. So this is the biggest problem of European Union, of European policy, to decide how many genders do we have. And now imagine that if they do have such a big problem with such a simple question and such an obvious question, how can they solve or approach very complex, very difficult technical or international issues? They are completely unable to do that, because simply they don't have a mental capacity to see the reality as it is. And that's why our party and our political groups call for reform of European Union. We are calling the European Union to be reformed and return back just to economical cooperation, like it was mentioned or meant to be before. And leave these political issues and these abstract themes, as you mentioned, just away. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you about the rationale of it? Because people usually don't like being threatened. They don't like being patronized. And when their views are called extreme or extremist, when they are being accused of demagoguery, of populism, they usually don't relate to it in a very nice way. Why do you think these establishment parties continue using that style of politicking? Because it strikes me as very immature and not very effective. Why do you think they are not perhaps more sophisticated or even more cunning?
Simply because they are blinded. They are blinded. They really believe that they are better than the rest of the world, that they have the right.
Well, they may believe all they want, but they cannot be blind to the fact that other people don't share their perception of them.
But actually, they are blind to see that. And that's why they don't use any sophisticated communication methods, because simply they don't see it. And the best they can do is to simply label or mark their political or opinion opponents as extremists, as radicals, as Russian agents, as I mentioned. So this is the best they can do. And of course, the best they can do is to silence up their opponents, like it happened very recently when the Mr. Durov, the owner of Telegram Group, was arrested in France just because he didn't want to cooperate with Western security services and he didn't want to apply censorship on the content which is published on Telegram. So, but as we say, and the people see it. People simply see it, and they see the difference which the mainstream media in Europe are bringing to people, and the difference between the reality, how it really is. And that's why people don't trust mainstream media in Europe very much anymore.
It's very interesting that you mentioned Pavel Durov, who was arrested not because of his particular views, but because of the way he goes about things. And to some extent, what do you have at hand here is not only the difference in values, but the difference about how to proceed about politics. And you make your speeches as much as you want, but at the same time, I don't think it is changing the way the European Parliament or the European Union as such is operating. What do you think could bring that operational change for everybody to agree on the proper rules of behavior rather than, you know, putting aside those rules when they run counter to your own political opinion?
Change has to come from the people because they are the they have the power and they have the right to decide what government is going to be. And this is the way how the things should be changed, in a democratic way, in a free way. And if the people understand that they are being lied to or the reality has to be changed because the current political line simply isn't very well, then they will simply change or vote for change, and the change will come. So democratic principle is the only way forward.
You mentioned elections, we just had the major regional elections in Germany, which delivered a significant upset to the establishment parties. And I think it raises a very interesting question of post-Cold War identities, because there are many people, especially in East Germany, who no longer think that, you know, they have to somehow be remade into proper Europeans, that their entire DDR legacy has to be sort of condemned and put aside. What do you think it signifies? Do you think it's just a German thing, or do you think it applies more generally to some phenomenon in Europe?
I think it's a general phenomenon, and it will continue with former and forward elections. Regarding the situation in Germany, I don't think that elections were a result of only of social welfare issues or GDP or salaries, but the people are simply not satisfied of where the of what's happening with their countries. And the one reason which I think that the change is coming from Central and Eastern European countries is that we had a previous regime, communist regime, where we were able to see that censorship. And simply we can, our people, our citizens can more easily recognize that that they are being lied to and that the reality is completely different as described in mainstream establishment media. On the other hand, people on Western part of the Europe, they are more trustworthy to the mainstream media. They simply cannot believe that they are being lied to, that they are being manipulated by media owners or by some politicians or some governments. And that's why they need a little bit more time to wake up and to see that the Europe needs change, because otherwise their countries are simply doomed.
Well, coincidentally, Mr. Ulrich, we also need a little bit more time right now to take a very short break, but we will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
What is Bharat? Is it a travel ad? Is it a Bollywood poster? Is it the deepest yoga center in the world? Or is it something deeper, more complex, multifaceted? Let's talk without cliches. Let's talk Bharat.
объект вышел из такси.
Я работаю.
This is footage of arrests of traitors who operated in Donbass under the orders of Ukrainian special services. Their hands are stained with the blood of hundreds of people who were their neighbors in the towns and villages of Donbass. Each was promised money and a career in Ukraine's security service. In case of failure, they were guaranteed sanctuary in Ukraine. However, today's reality for them is jail time for many years. The outcome of working for Ukraine, the enemy, is up to 20 years in prison for terrorism and espionage.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Milan Urich, member of the European Parliament for Slovakia and the leader of the Republic Movement. Mr. Urich, before the break, we started talking about the results of recent German elections. And once they were out, you wrote that they show that future belongs to, quote, a Europe of sovereign nations. It belongs to the protection of traditional values. It belongs to European prosperity, freedom and sovereignty. How much time do you think it will take for this glorious future to materialize in reality?
I think that the change will come as soon as possible, immediately, if you ask me. But honestly, it will take some time, of course, because the inertia in politics, in governments is very, very strong. So it will take some time. Firstly, people in European countries, in EU countries, have to realize that the current way their governments are leading, most of their governments are leading their countries, is simply wrong, and is simply leading to crisis. And secondly, many people have to realize that we are not extremist, we are not threat as we are being labeled or described by mainstream media, which are covering those governments which are doing bad decisions. So, as I said, I'm sure that the future belongs to Europe of sovereign nations, because there is no other way forward. We see the current situation, we see what current policies have brought to Europe, have brought to world, and we don't want to continue with that. So we have to change that, and the only alternative is Europe of sovereign nations, is cooperation, but on an equal level and on a level of mutual respect. So this is our political program and our way forward.
Now, I think you would agree with me that the European enlargement, at least after the Cold War, was based to some extent on the idea that the former socialist bloc countries were victims of communism, and Western values were seen as the tool of essentially fixing them. And there was sort of this element of good social engineering. You know, we will make you into proper liberally minded human beings. And we are seeing another wave of that with all those new age ideas about gender, which you mentioned, also about many aspects, social aspects of society. Do you think those powers that pursuing that doctrine, this new social doctrine, will actually let you have your vision of the future of not only sovereign nations, but I assume sovereign people as well, where everybody can make a choice about how to lead his or her life, how to raise, you know, kids, you know, how to choose faith, et cetera. Do you think those powers will allow you to have that?
I don't think the question stays if they allows us. It's not their right to allow or don't allow. They are elected to rule the countries, to follow the will of the people, of citizens, and that's what they should do.
They have a lot of influence, both vivid and sometimes secretive, and you know, they're pretty entrenched in the ways they're doing things, aren't they?
Yes, indeed, they are. But the change can be done. We saw it many times in history, and I'm sure that the change will come. When you mentioned the previous era, the communism, that the people in Western countries feel that they have the right to somehow teach us, to lead us, to tell us what's wrong and what's right. Come on, we don't see previous regime, I mean communist regime, as a dark age, because we have lived in the regime. Of course, there were some bad things, but there were some good things like social social policy and so on. And we say that we should learn from the past, that what was wrong should be simply changed, and what was good should be followed and take to the future. And I think this is the approach forward. And again, I don't care about what the governments think, because I'm not being elected to follow the governments. I was elected by our voters, by our citizens, to follow and apply our political program, which is simply different. And if we will have the chance, we will apply it. That's it.
Now, I was also born in the socialist camp, in the last few years of the Soviet Union. And I agree with you that that project, that political project, had many downsides, but there was a certain degree of autonomy to family values. I mean, within the family, parents could decide what to teach their children. They sometimes taught them secret values, but at least the parties didn't try to intervene into family or even personal matters, which I think is happening all over Europe with all this discourse about gender and gender bathrooms, whatever. How do you explain that? Why do you think Western values are taking aim at that particular domain, while, as you mentioned, there are many, many problems that they could have addressed?
Because they are unable to solve the other problems, the real problems regarding economy, regarding international affairs and so on. That's why they are bringing pseudo problems, pseudo issues, as you mentioned before, abstract values to the front. And they are simply making the public busy with problems which doesn't exist in reality. They are simply covering their incompetence. So that's why they are doing that. But I agree, and I must admit that to a very narrow part, or to a very basic part of these politicians, really believes that there are more gender and that they are enlightened, and the whole world should follow their way of life. They really believe that.
I find the issue of freedom very interesting here, because ultimately freedom is a spiritual value. It's based on the idea that there's something inside of you, whether on a personal or on a collective level, that, you know, guides your own development as a sovereign being or as a sovereign nation. So this is something that cannot be dictated or brought from the outside. And yet, many Western politicians, while endorsing the idea of freedom, they are also endorsing the idea of a change brought from within. And to me, that's a major philosophical and, frankly, spiritual paradox. I wonder if they are doing that because, first of all, they lost faith with big F, and second of all, if they lost faith in themselves and the ability to change something within themselves, their own societies, and therefore they have to perform it on somebody else.
Yes, indeed. They lost faith. Most of them don't believe in Christianity, in God himself. So they simply don't have the correct values, let's say, in their lives. They don't know what's really important and what's like less important when it comes to life priorities. And that's why they are so incompetent. So for me, this their attempt to simply change the whole world, to change the thinking, the mind of the people, is the most dangerous part of their policy, because they are not bringing freedom of speech or freedom of thinking. They are narrowing it down, actually. They are narrowing it down to only their point of view, their ideology, and the rest is labeled or marked as some extremism, some radicalism or fanatism and so on. And this is what, as I said earlier, scares me the most. They are simply fanatics, many of them, which are willing to go very, very far with their ideology and pushing their ideology. And what's happening, what's the result, is we see it all around the world, what's happening, how the number of international conflicts is increasing just because of the ideology, and the number of even conflicts among the citizens, among the families, is increasing in Western countries, how the situation is being more and more unstable just because of ideological thinking or ideological manipulation. And this is what scares me the most. And this is what we want to stop and bring back as it was before, to the freedom of thinking, freedom of speech.
You mentioned conflicts, and I think it's pretty vivid that the war in Ukraine and the break with Russia don't add stability or prosperity on the European continent. And it seems to be turning into this sort of long-running stalemate. How do you see this crisis developing in months or perhaps years to come?
First of all, I think that the conflict in Ukraine could be prevented if all parties, let's say, would respect Minsk agreements. But as we have heard from the Western politicians, they never intended to respect these agreements. They just wanted to buy more time to prepare for war. And, you know, the situation came where it is it as it is? And the question is now, what can be done? How can it be stopped? And how the world, we are talking about geopolitical conflict, how can the world bring back to normal way of life, normal thinking, because that's what the people are asking for. And our political program, our political view about this is quite clear. We call for stop so-called anti-Russian, indeed anti-European sanctions. We call for stop military supplies for war conflicts for Ukraine as well. And we call for peace negotiations, for a normalization of relations also with Eastern countries, including Russia and Belarus and so on, because what's happening right now? Come on, what's happening right now? Right now, the Western politicians, they say that there are plenty of dictators and not democratic governments all around the world, and that we should impose sanctions against Russia, against China, against Syria, against many, many other countries, which don't blindly follow the ideology of European Commission or European leaders, and they are imposing sanctions. But look around, they are imposing sanctions almost on the whole world. So at the end of the day, they are not making isolated those countries, they are making isolated themselves, they are making isolated the West. And that's why we call to stop this madness and to come back to the table, to diplomacy, and start living again peacefully.
I agree with you that those sanctions come back to hurt many European countries and many ordinary businesses or ordinary people in Europe. And there are increasing number of people and groups that are calling to lift them up for the sake of Europe itself. But those calls are not heeded yet. How much time do you give to, you know, this thing to turn around? Because, I mean, again, I've interviewed a lot of speakers from around Europe who would say things similar to what you're saying, but that ability to actually change that is pretty limited, unfortunately.
Well, it's limited right now. It's limited right now because the governments are as they are. The European Commission is being elected in next months, so we will see about that. But as well, during the time being, we see also many, many changes and many, many problems which are emerging, like crisis with European car industry. There is crisis with price of energies coming to Europe. And these are things that have to be solved somehow. And the only solution for them is, as I said, to end the conflict-based policy and to start again a cooperation-based policy. It means not searching enemies all around the world, but instead looking for partners, looking for friendships, looking for cooperation. And that's the way how to end the conflict. And that's the way how to end the madness itself. And how much time would it take? That's a question, but I think the change is coming, although slowly, but still. It is coming. We saw it in Slovakia, we see it in Hungary, we see it in Germany right now, and I think many other countries, European countries, will follow very soon.
Well, Mr. Ulrike, I certainly hope that your vision of Europe that values mutual benefit, mutual respect and moral equality, I hope it will prevail sooner rather than later. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I hope that you are right, that the peace will prevail at the end. Thank you.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.